What's happening, friends? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, across the table from me, the man that y'all love to make fun of, the Big Fizzy, King LaCroix, Kyle Phils.
How's it going, everybody? I'm here back in studio. Yeah, speaking of Big Fizzy, we had a baseball event this last weekend. Tryouts for Jacob's Travel 2. I know everybody's getting tired of hearing the baseball stories, but just real quickly, as I'm walking up, there's people out there. Hey, Big Fizzy.
Some of the parents found out.
And then one of the boys was walking with a LaCroix. I go, hey, is that a LaCroix? He's like, yeah. I'm like, and then I could just hear giggling from the. I'm like, so people are starting to pick up the name Big Fizzy.
Now they're trolling you. All the people on the ball teams are trolling you now.
And I'm like, well, it's not the only thing I drink.
Might as well be.
It is very good. I'm not done with my my surveys. People send me in new stuff all the time. Now, some of the drinks people have sent me, I couldn't find. Like, of course, you can order them like on Amazon or from Costco or something, but it's hard to find them in stores.
Yeah.
But I've been going to these specialty shops. Like,
are you
going to
start writing a blog about this?
No.
Come on. You're going to start blogging about.
I don't have time.
Come on now.
If I win the lottery and I'm worth like $130 million, then
I would
start.
Do you play the lottery?
No, I don't. But if I did, then I would move to like Thailand or the Seychelles Islands.
Blog
about fizzy water. No, man, I don't have time. I wish I did.
Yeah.
You know, I thought about blogs are interesting. I mean, I know they're still there, but I don't think they're quite as popular as they used to be. I think podcasts have taken them over.
Well, that
but
and the
eight
ability.
Years ago.
The ability to do on your phone live stuff, too.
Yeah. I was going to say, like eight or nine years ago, man, I was all about reading blogs. Yeah. Like, that was where I got most of my news from, and especially with like the paranormal and stuff. I mean, that's what really got me, kind of led me to this path of being in podcasting. Was blogs.
Do you think it's because people like YouTube better now? It's like the video blog. Is vlog still a word?
Yeah, it's still vlogging is when you're like, if we were to have a camera following, like say when we went and played disc golf, if we were to take a video and talk to the camera.
We kept saying we were going to do that. Do you think anybody would care?
No, I don't think anybody would care, but that would be vlogging. So yes, there is still vlogging. But I don't really consider it vlogging if you have like a studio set up with cameras. I mean, that's just kind of like doing your show.
I got you.
Which... we've thought about doing that in the past, too, but I don't think what people understand is the more technical or the more you turn it into like a television show, the more work that's required.
Well,
the editing. Now you're editing video and audio.
But I like the organic stuff, too, of this. Like,
none
of this is scripted. None of us ever, like Kyle has no idea what I'm even going to discuss today. I haven't even told him anything. I just wanted to do it in studio here with him. He just now found out what news story I'm fixing to talk about. The whole thing, like, I like to try to keep it just as organic as possible.
I think that's the best way. And people are often surprised. They think that we have, like, the intro and the outros and everything scripted out, and we don't.
No.
We kind of go off the fly. And numerous times people have asked to sit in studio and watch us do a show. And once again, it's kind of like you're saying, it kind of throws off the chemistry of the room. Because then I feel like I'm performing versus just having a conversation with one of my best friends.
Yeah.
Where when it's just me, like if we were to do this in front of, say, a stadium filled with 30,000 people.
I couldn't do it.
It'd be very difficult to get through, right?
That'd be
the fact that it's just me and you tucked away in a little tiny room, it doesn't feel like I'm talking to anybody other than you.
Yeah.
And so there's a freedom with that. Like, there's a lot of things you say that you would cringe if you were saying it in a public forum.
But
where if
in
it's
a way,
just
we
you
are,
and your buddy.
But,
well, yeah, totally it's that way. But I think that's what makes it so fun, right?
I think so.
Is capturing a conversation between two people.
Yeah.
And
I'll tell you what I wished I had.
What's that?
I wished I had somebody to help me do my plumbing over the weekend.
Yeah, let's get into that debacle.
I had a broken water line caused by a tree root, and I get out there and dig it all up, and this tree root has cracked my water line, and there's no room. So I'm like, well, I'm going to have to dig it up, you know, and cut this tree root out of the way. And there's no easy way to get to it. And so I'm like, well, I need to get a saw after this tree root. So I get a Sawzall out, and I start running this Sawzall, big cordless Sawzall, and I'm going to work cutting these. And when I say tree roots, folks, I'm talking like big ones. Like large roots that I'm cutting up out of the ground. And I'm not paying attention. Your hands are wet. You know, you've been digging around, working on this thing for a while, trying to get it out. And I finally get this tree root cut back, and my hand, I feel like the saw is going to burn up. And I put it down. I'm like, man, that saw is hot. And I look down. I have got, from soft, waterlogged hands, I've got blisters as big as quarters that have ripped at least one, maybe two layers of skin off in the palms of my hands and on three of my fingers. My hands look like I've burned them on a stove.
You gotta wear work gloves, bro.
I should have, and I didn't even think about it. I was just in a hurry. I was trying to get it done, and they are killing me right now. At least they're not as swollen. I could barely sleep last night, but now, so now they're beginning to dry out, and it's just awful and tender and just not a good thing.
It's gonna be hard to be playing patty cake or doing handstands.
You're not gonna do any push-ups. You're not gonna play catch.
Kneading bread.
Yeah, you don't want that to have happen.
Which, all jokes aside, Cam's a very good bread baker.
Oh, I can make some good bread.
You've made some really jam up bread.
I don't know what it is about. That's what my wife always laughs about. I have to do most of the cooking. My wife's an amazing cook, but she likes it when I do it because I find crazy recipes, and then I go wild with it, and I go get all the stuff and make it, and they're like, that's awesome, and I'm like, and then I don't want to make it again.
have you mastered making rice yet? Because I know you've been practicing making rice.
I make sushi rice, yes. I also make homemade pasta. Like, I got the pasta roller. I don't mean like the machine. I mean like make the dough. I got the roller. I got the cutter. You set it up and let it dry. Make your own pasta. Do all that stuff. It really is different. Whenever you make everything yourself, yeah. Like, I'll do the grilled chicken to put in there for the chicken parm or something where you cut it all. Yeah, so, I mean, all of that stuff is really, really, yeah.
I don't know how to do any of that, but I remember my grandmother doing that. Oh. I mean, as a kid. Maybe my family's from New Jersey and New York, so, I mean, everybody up there knows how to make Italian food.
Yeah, exactly.
But I remember her making, like, the little tortellinis on her, you know, she had a big, I don't know what it was, big piece of wooden board, you know, and she'd put the flour out, and she'd just show you how to do it with her finger.
Just
she could do it really
them?
Quick. Oh, yeah. I remember helping her and doing that stuff. And
you were just in the way.
Yeah, but
it was good grubbing, wasn't it?
I would like to have that. You know, it's one of those things, like, is it as good as I remember it? I wish I could have it now. Like, I wish my grandmother could cook that recipe now.
Yeah.
And then I could eat it, because then he'd be like, it'd probably blow me away. I'd be like, what am I doing?
Exactly.
Going to Olive Garden.
Yeah.
What?
What is this stuff? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The kids love Olive Garden, but I don't. Here's what they do every time. They order their meal, and then they just eat breadsticks and salad, and then they take the meal home, and they usually eat it the next day.
Yeah, I'm not hating on that. I go crazy on those
breadsticks.
They do
that all the time, though. I don't understand why.
Like, you went to Babe's Chicken. Don't eat the chicken. Just eat all
just
the
eat
sides.
The vegetables.
Yep, just eat all the sides.
Bring the chicken home.
That's right. Hey, I got you something here that you and I was discussing a few weeks ago about thought forms. And, you know, when we had talked to Mr. Kutchin, we were also discussing about thought forms. This is from Cryptozoology News, folks. Buckle up. I know you find it hard to believe. A New York couple encounters a humanoid on the road in Queensbury, New York.
Okay.
Now, this was a couple. They claimed they saw an unidentified humanoid. Now, the fella, who, of course, wanted to remain anonymous, had his fiancée with him. And they're cruising down the road near Queensbury when they spotted what they said was a strange figure. And this was like a couple of Sundays ago at about 12:15 in the morning. And he put this in a MUFON report. And this is what he says. I quote, I was driving. We pulled off exit 20 southbound and our car came to a stop. And he goes on to say that he had turned his blinker on to go left, said he looked both ways. And when he looked both ways, he noticed when he glanced over that there was a tall, slender figure dressed in black with stick-like features.
That's not good.
Now, he said this thing, what he called an entity, was only about 50 feet away and was standing in the middle of the road. Now, he said he was guessing it was about 10 feet tall.
Mm.
Now, he said, I asked my fiance what she saw, and she described the exact same thing. Now, they go on to say that they had already made the left turn when they decided to turn around to check on this sighting. So, they had turned when they saw it. They turned around, and he said, we turned back around the road to be like, maybe, now what was this? They come back. Nothing was there. Now, he said they stopped where it should have been, looking around for it still. And he said the whole time they were there, they felt like they were being watched. My only question is this. Could it have been somebody playing around? Could it have been somebody, like we were talking about the trolling, the having fun? I'm assuming yes. It could. In theory,
of course,
it could have been someone going, hey, look, let's hide over here. Let's mess with some people.
It very well could, especially with everybody knowing about Slender Man now. With the movie coming out and the documentary,
and it's
become popular on websites like Creepypasta and things like that. Or, like I've often talked about, sorry, my voice drift away there. As I've often talked about, is whatever this thought form, like you were talking about, are we manifesting this because so many people are collectively thinking about it, and maybe this person driving down the road has been dwelling upon the Slender Man. Maybe they've read something online or in a book.
Or maybe that was a harbinger of doom. That's the reason they first saw it, is it's there to give them some bad news. You don't need to marry that old gal.
That's true. You know what? Speaking of Slender Man, Nick Redfern's going to be coming on the show soon to talk about his book, Slender Man.
Oh.
And we're going to have to remember this actual sighting and see if we can pick his brain on that.
There we go.
It's an interesting topic, because I get emails all the time where people claim to see something similar to that. And then you also get emails from people saying, hey, Kyle, you know that that's fake, right? And I'm like, well, I do know that it's fake. Yes, I understand the year it was created and all that to try to win a scary story contest online. I get all that, and they can trace all that back.
But
there's a lot of scary things going on with similar described, you know, creatures described as being slender like that. Even going back before the story contest happened. And of course, no one can forget the murder that the girl carried out.
Yeah,
because they were trying to please the Slender Man, and it just makes you wonder if there is a dark force, a djinn, a demon, and it's looking to prey upon a child or young person. Wouldn't it make sense to pick your brain and know what your deepest, darkest fear is? And if something that terrifies you, like Slender Man, wouldn't it manifest itself in that form?
Of course.
I mean, I remember I think it was Twilight Zone, the movie. Remember the one where the kid is like obsessed with cartoons, and he starts making the cartoons come out of the screen, and they're tormenting his sister. And
I always think about the movie Dreamscape because of that whole thing where they get inside your dream.
Dreamscape?
What is it? Dennis Quaid? Mm-hmm. Where they're psychics, but they can get inside your dream. They teach that guy, they want him to go in there and murder the president in his dreams. And so he preys on whatever you're the most afraid of while you're in your dream.
Yeah, and so does Freddy Krueger, right? He does the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, what Dreamscape? I don't know.
That's old school, dude. It's awesome.
For some reason, I keep thinking of like Gleaming the Cube or something.
Oh, that wasn't bad, too. And Rad.
Yeah, Crew Jones, man. Crew Jones. Terrifying. That's a terrifying encounter. Speaking of missing things and missing squadrons, we talk about, you know, missing Flight 19 and things. Check this one out. This is pretty interesting. On July 15th, 1942, apparently, 6 P-38 Lightning fighter aircraft and 2 B-17 Flying Fortresses, and these are bombers, encountered a blizzard while supporting the Allied war effort in the British Isles, and the aircraft were forced to conduct an emergency landing on the glaciers of Greenland. And though all the crew members, they say, were rescued 9 days later, the aircraft were left behind. Now, over the decades, the ever-shifting ice sheets of Greenland have actually buried the aircraft. These are known as the Lost Squadron. They are buried, Cam, between 250 and 350 feet of snow and ice.
Wow.
And 50 years later, back in 1992, one of the P-38s was extracted from the ice and fully restored to flying condition and was named the Glacier Girl. Well, now, since 1992, they've come up with a new search effort led by a nonprofit, Arctic Hot Point Solutions Company, and they've discovered another one of the P-38s from this lost squadron buried in the ice. They said that hints of the aircraft were first detected back in 2011 as the team combed the area with radar to search for objects buried under the ice. And earlier this year, the team returned to deploy new ground-penetrating radar mounted on drones to more efficiently search for buried World War II planes. Now, once this new P-38 was detected, the search team used a heat probe driven by a hot pressure water system to tunnel through the ice in an attempt to touch the aircraft and confirm that it was indeed an airplane rather than, say, like a large rock or a woolly mammoth or something. Now, according to the team, they updated an article there on Popular Mechanics, and they say that when the heat probe came up, the team was pleasantly surprised to find it covered in 5606 hydraulic fluid, a surefire sign that the object was one of the missing P-38s. So 5606 is a type of hydraulic fluid that's used in planes, especially back in World War II.
Word.
So they've identified the aircraft as a missing P-38, one of the missing P-38s, and it was called Echo. And they said it was piloted by a man named Robert Wilson on that fateful day back in 1942. And the search team, with support from the governments of Greenland, the United States, and the United Kingdom, plans to return next summer to begin the extraction process of this P-38 as well. And they said, like during the recovery of the Glacier Girl, the team will use large heat plates to tunnel down to the aircraft, then send workers down to clear out a cavern around the plane with blasts of hot water. The P-38 will be then disassembled, and they'll send it back up the shaft piece
by piece. That's an awful lot of work, isn't it?
Man, they say it is, but they say what's interesting is these things are pristine. They've been locked in snow and ice, since 1942, and they basically look exactly the same. There's little rust. There's little problems.
Wow.
So, I mean, and they said that they're going to try to slowly uncover the whole squadron. So a bunch of P-38s, they said there's six still missing, six P-38s and two B-17 bombers, which are big.
Yeah.
And they're all buried in the ice, and they're going to try to extract all of them.
They're just practicing, so when they get in there and find some of those lost ruins.
They also talk, later in the article, it talks about another location about 26 miles away from there, where there's another aircraft that's locked in ice, and they said that the three airmen on board are probably still entombed inside of that one.
Oh, wow.
So they're going to try to find that. But when you first start reading this article and you start thinking about these airplanes in the ice, the first thing that pops up to me is The Thing.
Yes.
With, not Russell Crowe, but...
Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell.
The original Thing.
Well, that's actually the second one, right? The original black and white.
Yes.
One's terrible. But yeah, the good one. John Carpenter's
yes.
The Thing.
Yeah.
Which the newer one wasn't that bad.
Nope, wasn't bad.
But it wasn't as good as that one. I remember seeing that as a kid.
Terrified?
As like a 9 or 8 year old... terrified doesn't even
they
begin.
Stick that hot wire in the blood, it's like everybody's
doesn't
freaking
even
out.
Now once again, why my parents let me watch something like that as an 8-year-old?
Raised by savages.
But I remember, I mean, it was hard for me to sleep for weeks.
Oh yeah. I
terrifying.
Still like it.
and that's, I don't know if we talked about this on air or not, but that's another thing, is like people always want to know, you're into the dark and paranormal things, but you're not into horror movies. And I think we did talk about this, is it's that they don't scare me anymore.
Yeah.
Back then, boy, they did.
Now,
big
not
time.
So much.
Now, a scary movie to me would be like people getting audited by the IRS or something like that.
yeah, that would, yeah, exactly.
That would be terrifying.
Well, I've got a story here that's going to tie in to what I'm going to be talking about after the break. This story, Lon posted that he got from a buddy of his, and he decided to repost this. Now, what's really cool is he said the people involved in this were acquaintances of this person that sent it to him. So this person that sent it had been a reader of his blog and followed all this stuff and said, hey, I knew these people, so I'm going to send this to you. All right, now this is what it says. It says, at approximately 1:15 a.m. on November 20th of 2004, my wife and I had retired to sleep on the second level of our Boca Raton, Florida home after watching TV in our first floor den. Now, as I often do, I put on our TV in our room, which helps me to get to sleep. As I watched the National Geographic special, I became groggy. Knowing that keeping the TV on all night bothers my wife, I grabbed the remote and switched off the TV and quickly fell into a deep sleep. In what seemed an instant after doing so, I was awakened by my wife, who questioned me as to where I was. My immediate response was in our bed. My wife then explained to me that she awoke because she sensed that I was not in bed with her. She then stated that she searched the whole house and even walked to the guardhouse in her pajamas of our community to see if anybody had been permitted to drive to our residence to pick me up. She was told nobody had come into the community. Upon her return, she burst into the room and found me in our bed. She stated that my car was in our driveway and that my wallet, cell phone, and money was just that I had left in our kitchen when we went upstairs, which further upset her. She knows me well enough to know that if, in fact, I left our home for some reason, I would have taken these items with me. We do not live near any stores or establishments that one could walk to. Now, as I awoke, she further explained that the covers of our bed on my side looked exactly as if I had pushed them down and left the bed. Realizing that she was not kidding, I informed her that I had just turned off the TV and fell asleep. She then reconfirmed that she searched our entire residence and that I was not physically present. I glanced at the clock and it was about 2:30 a.m. when she stormed into our bedroom and awoke me with this shocking news. Now, I tried to comfort and console her at this point and confirmed that to my knowledge, I had not left our bed, not even used the bathroom. Not really sure what had happened, we went back to bed. And when I awoke, I asked her to confirm what had happened and that either her nor I were dreaming. She confirmed it. Now, somehow, I do not think either of us actually accepted this event as reality because we awoke and didn't really talk about it. Now, as a believer, I felt like I needed to let somebody know to help me understand what might have happened. So I searched the web and found a site to report these incidences. And then I called and was instructed to fill out this report as I am. Now, I consider myself of sane and sound mind, and I am a local business owner. I was also instructed to have my wife file an incident report, which will be done first thing in the morning. Now, I am also willing to have this event scrutinized by any means required to validate, including on-site investigation, cameras, lie detectors, anything. It almost seems like something out of the Twilight Zone, and I feel more confused than anything. I'm not sure what really happened. The evidence has it that I was somehow physically missing from my home for 45 to 60 minutes without my knowledge. I was told to examine myself for any marks and did not find any. However, from the base of my throat to the middle of my chest, it is mildly red, as if I had been exposed to the sun. I can tell because when I press the area, a brief mark appears, such as one gets a sunburn and presses the affected area with the finger. The rest of my body is unaffected. Now, this took place, like I said, back in 2004. So that's what this whole thing, he's talking about this, but this thing was submitted, but it was all written in 2004. So,
yeah, what?
There's nobody reports of lights. Nobody reports of anything happening. I saw, like you hear people talking about being abducted, and the loved one beside them, their spouse, never awakens. So it's one, like, they can see him there and they're asleep. It's almost like she had sleep paralysis. No, she woke up because she's like, wait, he's not here. He was just here. Now he's not here. So from 1:15, he said when he went upstairs. Now, he doesn't say how long. You remember, he doesn't say how long. He was just watching some TV. They went upstairs. He had the TV on in the bedroom, decided to go asleep. So like he said, it may have only been 45 minutes up to maybe an hour. He may have gone to bed. He went to sleep at 1:30 and she woke him up at 2:30. Whenever she realized that he was back in the room after she'd been running around looking for him.
Yeah, that is...
Isn't that a crazy story?
That is a crazy story.
And the reason I tell you that story is because after the break, folks, I'm going to get into some really crazy and disturbing stories of sleepwalking. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All right, here we go. Sometimes I like to save these wild stories too because I like to look at Kyle's face and get his immediate reaction when I run these things past him. So some of these are worth doing whenever I'm staring at him, and this is one of them. I myself have never suffered from sleepwalking. When I go to sleep, I stay like down, like I'm done. But I'm not like a super deep sleeper. Anything out of the norm, like an odd sound or something, yeah, I'll usually wake up from it. And my kids learned, and my wife, I'm also not one you want to startle awake. Like, if they come to wake me up, they grab me by the feet. I don't like any, like, a quick, sudden awake. I come up swinging. Like, it's it's not good. I don't like to be jarred awake. So, this is one of those things, when I tell you these stories, some of them are crazy, and then some of them are extremely brutal and sad, and it's a horrible, horrible thing. Now, I didn't know this. They started studying sleepwalking. I would say maybe the actual study started taking place back in Vienna with Sigmund Freud back in, I believe it was in the early 1900s. Because now here's what's funny. This is what Freud believed. He believed that there was a connection between sleepwalking and the fulfillment of sexual desires.
What?
But of course, you got to imagine that there was a lot of stuff that had to deal with sex back then. You remember? I mean, there was a lot of things that was trickling down through the Puritan belief system that if you weren't just straight laced and, you know, everybody had on their suits and all this stuff, if you were outside the norm, it was because you had odd sexual desires. So you go into that. But there was a lot of other stuff. There was another parapsychologist back in Germany with the last name of Reichenbach, and he actually studied it, and he believed kind of like what Freud believed. He believed that it was when you would act out your dreams. So that if you were sleepwalking, you were really acting out what you saw in your dream, which we know is not true. You know, there's lots of stuff you dream about you can't act out. A lot of time, and they always tell you, don't wake a sleepwalker. They always tell you all these crazy sleepwalking stories and tales of what you can and can't do. Now, my son.
I was going to say, wasn't Sigmund Freud into doing a little toot?
Oh, yeah.
And so that probably piqued some of sexual desire, too, right?
A couple of little bumps here and there. I knew some, too. Yeah.
Little devil's dandruff.
That's right. So, yeah, I got the drip.
I can't feel my face.
Yeah.
I mean, I can feel it.
But I can't.
But I can't feel it.
My tongue numb. You look at these. Like I said, my son, when he was little, I'd say he was probably 7 or 8. I really wouldn't say sleepwalk, but I guess you could say he would get up to go to the bathroom, and then he may leave the bathroom and go all through the house before you'd ever make it. You'd have to get up and get him and guide him back to his room and get him back in bed, and he would not remember any of it. Like, he was just done.
He's like on autopilot.
Yeah, pretty much. But if he made the wrong zig when he should have zagged, he'd be over in the kitchen trying to lay down and go to sleep.
Mm.
He hasn't done it. He did it for a couple of years, and then that was it. I mean, like, he just outgrew sleepwalking, I guess, is one of those things. But there's a lot of wild stories. I'm going to give you one of the stories. Now, this comes from the IB Times, and this is a story about a woman named Leslie Cusack. She was from the UK, and get a load of this, is forced to diet during the day because she has this disorder in her sleep that she will eat up to 2,500 calories every night. Now, at the time of this was written,
wow, I've heard of people having this problem where they eat at night.
It's called nocturnal sleep-related eating disorder.
And I knew a guy that had the similar problem, but his was brought on because he had a prescription for, like, Ambien.
Now, there's a lot of I didn't include those stories.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stories of sleep aids making people do wild, wild stuff, too. Really wild stuff. But this woman, she's a 55-year-old woman. And she has to diet extremely strict during the day because at night, like I said, now get a load of this, it affects between 1 and 3% of the entire population, and it can cause significant weight gain, and it also increases the risk of type 2 diabetes. Because you have to think about this, if you're doing it and you don't have a loved one to monitor you, how do you know when you're doing it, when to stop? You have no clue. Now, of course, there's always the remnants afterwards when you get up the next morning, but it's called NSRED. NSRED is what it's called, for the nocturnal sleep-related eating disorder. Now, this is what happens. They'll wake up, they have no recollection of what they did the night before. Now, in her case, Leslie said that she would wake up and they would be packages that she would have put leftovers in. And then they would also be scraps on the plates. All of this stuff would be opened up. And we're talking 25,000 calories and up is what she would eat. So she's piling in all kinds of food and all that. Now, they go over calories all the time, but it doesn't really tell you what all she eats. But we're talking 2,500 and up. Now, when she was interviewed, she's got 3 children. When she was interviewed, she says, I can only tell what I've eaten by the remains of what's left in the morning. She goes, sometimes I found soup in pans. She goes, I've also found it in bowls. Like, she just, whatever's a holder, she'll just pour it in while she's sleepwalking and get after it. You just tear it all up. Now, during the day, she's basically a vegetarian. She eats, you know, fruits, nuts, and vegetables. And she's in a club. She's trying to lose weight. This whole thing. She said that her weight was a constant battle, and now it's even worse. You know, after being a mother, she's worried. But now, she goes, I have to follow the diet super, super strict because of what I do. She said, the worst, get a load of this. Here's what's worse. Now, here's a bad thing. She's divorced, mother of 3, divorced. And she said that when she can't find food, like when she gets up in her sleep and she can't find the food at all, she gets into other things. Now, here's the other things. Paint, Vaseline, raw potatoes, soap powder, and cough syrup. She says, this is one of her quotes, the night I ate paint was the only time I've ever woken up. I can still remember standing in the kitchen, touching my mouth, and being very confused. So her body is rejecting whatever it is because it's like a poison. So that snaps her out of it. But can you imagine? Here's another thing. And that's something I never thought of. She's chipped several teeth while she's done it.
Wow.
Yeah. Suffered bruises from falling down over spilled food while you're sleepwalking. She even said that she's used, of course, they call it the kettle. She's used the teapot, the kettle, She's used a skillet, a pressure cooker. She's even used sharp knives in the middle of the night, and she has no recollection of this. She's like, I'm afraid, too, that if anything was to happen and the door was to be open, I may go outside. She goes, I don't know what would happen.
Yeah.
Now imagine using, like we talked about, now you got boiling water. If you're not willing, you just pour it in there on some noodles and then start drinking it. What I mean, at this point, you're going to wake up from the pain, but by that point, the damage is done. Imagine having that. Like I said, some of it is kind of, it's out there, this whole thing. There's another one. A fellow named James Curran, and at the time this took place, he was 77 years old, and he suffered from a somnambulism, and he sleepwalked out of his house, okay?
Yeah.
And he took his cane, and after he sleepwalked, he walked down to a pond near his house, and then he wades off out into the water with his cane asleep and starts swinging his cane at alligators. And at this time, he wakes up because of the water and the vigorous activity and ends up keeping him. He kind of gets his feet stuck in the mud, keeps thrashing with that cane till he can get him back to where other people, neighbors come and help him. They call the cops. They come and help him. They rescue him. He's okay. This isn't the first time James has walked out of his house.
Into the water, though.
Yeah. He waded off out into water. Yeah.
How do you do that without waking up?
I guess,
my question.
That's my whole thing is we don't. You and I have discussed the sleep off air. I've talked about it for years, about stuff not understanding it, you know. And then after listening to Joe Rogan when he had the guy on the sleep study guy, and he went to describing all this stuff about sleep, it's a very fascinating thing. When you deal with all this, so I can't even imagine. This gets even crazier. There's a fellow named Jules Lowe. Now, Jules Lowe was cleared of murder, but he admitted to beating his father to death while he was sleepwalking.
And he got off for that?
Yeah. This was in Waldkin in Greater Manchester back in 2003. Okay?
Uh-huh.
Jules Lowe. He had been drinking, out partying and drinking and all this stuff. And I'm assuming that his father had been drinking too, but his father was 83 years old at the time. When they found the body of his father, it had over 90 injuries to it. He had been kicked, he had been stomped on, and he'd been punched. And what's wild is the defense attorney for Mr. Lowe was like, I know it's crazy, but he claims he was sleepwalking. Now they go on. And they had an expert, okay? They were expert evidence going on and all this. So the jury said, okay, they decided, all right, after listening to all the stuff, they said, okay, he had to be sleepwalking and that he had to be completely unaware of his own actions. And when the judge heard all this stuff, he starts looking at it. He goes, well, what we're going to do is, and it, like I said, at this time he was younger, of course, they're going to detain him. So they're going to put Jules in a hospital. So they're going to check this stuff out. Now, he said, look, I'm not crazy. He is like, this is not an insanity plea. He said, like, I'm not looking to insanity. He said, but they call it automastism. And he said, that is due to his sleepwalking, that he was a subject. So the story goes that he attacked his father after he'd been drinking all night.
Yeah.
And then he made an inefficient cleanup, is what it says. So he tried to clean it up. Then he goes to bed. And then the way it sounds is he's laid out in the yard, that they had found the old man out in the yard beaten to death in the driveway. So I don't know if maybe the boy woke up and chased him out into the driveway, how all this stuff came up. Now, they did say that he had had a history of sleepwalking for months. And after that, for several months after that, now, of course, you could pretend to sleepwalk, too, if you were trying to keep from getting the chair. I understand that too. But apparently they tried to recreate some of this, recreate the reactions, recreate all this thing. This is what the prosecutor said. The prosecutor went forth and said, well, Mr. Lowe had simply been drunk. He came home, his father confronted him. And when his father confronted him being drunk and out of his mind, not knowing what he did, he blacked out and beat his father to death. And that, this is just an excuse that he's trying to use instead of just fessing up. Now, the jurors were actually asked by the prosecutor if this was realistically conceivable that he could have sleepwalked through an entire physical attack. Now, what we just discussed was the old fellow, Mr. Curran, woke up while he was in the water swinging his cane. We also just discussed that Miss Cusack woke up eating paint. But this fella claims that he didn't wake up at all while he beat his 83-year-old father to death.
He's just sound asleep.
Sound asleep. Didn't know anything about it till the next day.
I don't buy that.
Well,
it sounds a little too much.
It does sound a little bit too much. He'd also been arrested for being drunk and disorderly, okay, before that. He'd also been, he had run-ins with the law earlier in his life. After this whole thing, he got arrested about a year later after his father had passed for being drunk and disorderly in public. So it's
the guy that did the beating.
The guy that did the beating.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he was blacked out drunk.
That's exactly what it sounds like. But either way, he got off with it.
Wow.
He got off with the whole. I mean, he's not. There's nothing going down with him going to be killed. None of this thing. Now, there's one even crazier than this. This is a fella here. Okay. This is just wild. A fella named Kenneth Parks. And when I tell you this story, it's going to sound like it's out of a movie. But this was back in 1987. Kenneth gets up in the middle of the night, like he would normally get up to go to the bathroom, kicks the covers off, gets up, walks down, gets to the front door, slips his shoes on, okay?
Yeah.
Gets in his car, drives about 15, 20 miles down the road, okay?
Yeah.
To the home of his mother and father-in-law. Then he uses a key that he had to his in-law's house, like he would. And he unlocks the house, middle of the night, mind you. He's carrying a tire iron that he got out of his car. He walks in there, and he beats his mother-in-law to death.
Yeah,
with the tire iron. Right? Then he attacks his father-in-law. But he doesn't beat him to death. He just starts choking him. The father-in-law doesn't die. He fights his way off, survives the attack, blacks out, of course, but survives the attack. Then Kenneth, thinking that he's killed him, walks back out into the yard, gets in his car, and drives to the nearest police station and walks in covered in blood and tells them, I think I just killed two people. Yeah.
But that's an awkward conversation.
That's a one that's really, really hard to have, right? Now, everybody, when this all got cut loose, were like, this fella just lost his mind, just completely lost it. It was said that he had embezzled money from his own family and that he was also a compulsive gambler. And they believe that the money he had embezzled was to pay off old debt to keep himself from dying. And they believe that that was the motive, was that he had needed more money. So he was, you know, in a, I guess, a fit of rage or however he was doing. But that's not as wild as it gets. The story goes like this, that he'd been asleep watching TV and fell asleep laying there watching TV, and that he was completely unconscious and had sleepwalked, not just out of his house into his car, but enough to drive in there and kill him. And then he says he doesn't even remember driving to the police station, that whenever he woke up in the police station in custody.
And he's not on Ambien or anything like that?
Not that I can find anything crazy like that. Now, of course, it goes again. They start going back into the whole sleepwalking thing. They start digging into that. They start really checking on all this stuff. Now, the jury instantly ruled that he wasn't responsible for his actions. And he missed a life sentence because he wasn't found guilty. But he was sentenced to a psychiatric hospital because he was judged to be, at the time, completely insane. But here's what's wild. He got released. He walked out a free man. They appealed his court decision all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the judges upheld the decision. And now he's put on medication. Now he's on medication for it. And he's since, you'll like this, has never had another reoccurrence of sleepwalking. Sounds wild, doesn't it?
Sounds made up.
And it worked. It worked. So that's two cases of people committing murder and used the sleepwalking and got away with it.
Wow.
Now, look, that's the whole thing. This whole sleepwalking deal to me, I don't know anybody that does it. I don't know any adult that sleepwalks. Like, I've never seen it. Now, we've laughed about, we've seen drunks. You see drunks stumbling around and not remembering and go blackout drunk. We've seen that. Most of us have experienced that at one point or another. But to be a sleepwalker that you commit murder and then turn yourself in, although his father-in-law survived. And he claims he doesn't remember any of that. Now, look, if my deal is this.
His father-in-law might have been thankful. He might have been like, I didn't like her either. Thanks for helping relieve me of this burden.
That's so wrong.
I mean, they may be really close now.
My deal is this. If you're going to play it up as sleepwalking, go all the way. Go turn yourself in and then claim you don't remember it. That's a well-thought-out plan. Is it not?
Yeah.
That's the best way to cover your bases. Be the first person. Like we always said, if you're going to tell a lie, be the first person to tell the lie.
Yeah.
Because it's more believable.
Yeah.
So wow. He brought it up in front of him. Now, you're going to like this one too. Here's another a little wilder. Albert Terrell was the very first person to use sleepwalking in a criminal defense case all the way back in 1846. So this isn't new. This isn't something dreamed up in the last 50 years. 1846, his lawyer proved that Albert was a chronic sleepwalker. The police at the time had found the remains or the body of Maria Bickford. And she was a lady of the evening, if you will. And Albert had a very close relationship, with this woman, okay?
Okay.
Like a real relationship, not just, you know.
I know what you're saying.
For her services, a real relationship. They found her body with her head almost completely removed when they found it. Now, Albert had already had a wife and child. Before this, he was going to see Miss Bickford at the brothel during this time of the murder. Well, as you can only imagine, the newspapers gathered and gobbled this thing up, started plastering it everywhere. It was the talk of the town. Now, they say in these paper articles, it says here that Albert treated Miss Bickford like she was his girlfriend.
Okay.
Very, very close. And that he would be very jealous if he had found out she had another customer. So he expected her to be there for him, but not make any more money. So the story goes that after this, he goes up to see her. She's busy. She's taking care of some business. And then this fella leaves Miss Bickford's room, and Albert goes in there with a straight razor and tries to take it off, take her head completely off.
Oh, man.
And then set fire to the room to destroy any evidence. And then after that, he leaves and heads to New Orleans before he's finally arrested.
The food alone is worth the trip.
Right? Once he's arrested, he hires a famous attorney by the name of Rufus Choate from Boston. And Mr. Choate had been noted, I guess that you could say he had a reputation, but he had been noted in these circles of being able to really twist the law around upon itself and use some fancy words and some sleight of hand and keep his clients safe.
Okay.
So that's the reason Albert hired him, because they said that he didn't have any motive to kill her out of any cold blood, and that nobody had seen him go in there to kill her. There was no eyewitness to any of this stuff. Maybe he had gone in there, but they didn't know that he had, you know, none of this stuff. There was no eyewitness to the crime itself. And so there was no way to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he did it. So then Choate goes on to argue that Tyrell was a sleepwalker. And he believes that he could have been sleepwalking if he did, in fact, commit the act. But there was a plea of insanity of sleep defense that got Tyrell off. So in a way, he's like, I don't think he did it, but if he did do it, he was sleepwalking when he did it. So that tells you that he knows that Tyrell killed her.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I'm not saying, you know, I'm sitting next to the man that sat next to the man. So
who even knew that this was a defense?
It's been used multiple times. Multiple times. Again, a fella named Joseph Mitchell from North Carolina. Get a load of this. In 2010, was found not guilty of murder and attempted murder due to a sleepwalking defense. Now, he goes on later and admitted, now this is what the jury says, that they admitted that they couldn't do anything because the judge would not allow them to convict him on manslaughter. They wanted to convict him for manslaughter instead of murder, but they didn't. Now, this is what's the really disturbing part about this whole deal is Joseph strangled his 4-year-old son to death and then attempted to kill his 2 other older children after he'd gotten out of bed and put a Halloween mask on. Now, the prosecutors for the state believe that it was due to the pressure brought on by financial problems in their family. And then the defense said it was those problems that brought on his sleeping disorder that caused him to commit these crimes. Now, his 2 other children were 13 and 14, okay?
Yeah.
So he could only kill the 4-year-old because he couldn't. He tried to attack the 13 and 14-year-old, and they put it to him. They're like, nah, bro, this ain't going down like you think it's going down. So if you're just using your bare hands, it's a little bit more difficult than using a weapon as an adult. Now, all the evidence pointed to that's what he did, and that's why he did it, but the jury didn't even take a full, I think, 4 hours, I believe is what they said, was all it took for them to find him not guilty of the verdict. But like I said, they wanted to charge him with manslaughter and not murder. They wanted to back it down where they could at least get him. The judge wouldn't do it. Now, apparently, a woman that was his ex-wife named Christina, she was tore up by the whole deal because she felt like she had been the one that was at fault, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was all of her fault with the years and all this stuff. Of him having the kids there and they shouldn't have been there, you know, and it's always the grief and the blame and the things like this. But he was detained for 4 years. For 4 years, they kept him, I guess, under surveillance, detained on this whole deal before he finally walked out of there a free man. Now, just like all the rest of these cases, the jurors in these cases were not happy. The jurors wanted to express it that they were against all this and that they said the prosecution had failed to prove that there was a degree of malice for the first degree murder conviction. And because the judge refused to consider that Joseph on any lesser charges, to file on any lesser charges, that they were only forced to settle either guilty or not guilty. That was the only thing that they were allowed. So they were like, well, he's not guilty of first degree murder. So they don't believe, I guess, it was premeditated.
Right.
They believe it was just a spur of the moment type thing, but he was still guilty of killing someone. And that brings you to a fellow named Brian Thomas. Now, in 2010, in Wales, Brian Thomas, throughout his whole life, had a problem with sleepwalking and what he called night terrors, waking up, I guess, some nightmares and, you know, losing his mind. So he's on his anniversary holiday, 40th anniversary, with he and his wife. And they're on a little trip. What's he do? Well, he has a nightmare that they're being broken into and that there's thieves in the house that they're staying in.
Okay.
Actually, in the camper van, let's say, that they were staying in. So they had a caravan that they're in, right?
Okay.
And he believes that she's a burglar and a thief, and he chokes her to death. He says that he vaguely remembers coming out of sleep, and he woke up and he said he saw someone in the van with him. Okay.
Yeah.
And who he saw was a man wearing a black fleece top and blue jeans, and that this man was trying to have his way with his wife, Christine. And the story goes that he shouted, "You bastard," and he grabs the man by the throat and starts fighting him. And after he finally woke completely up, he realized that he had just killed, in air quotes, killed his wife. He realized, and starts trying to find help. And that he runs out and he finds somebody, gets on a phone, wherever he found this phone at, calls it up, and he talks to the police, and he said, "I think I've killed my wife." He's freaking out. And when they get there, he's sitting outside the camper and he's crying. He's all tore up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Wiped completely out. Now, they said that the night before all this, there was a bunch of like road racers around there. Okay.
Okay.
Like, I guess bikes and cars, and they were just doing them and keeping them up all night. They believe that that might have triggered some of this disorder that he suffered from these night things. But he was eventually, after all the trial, all of these things, was completely acquitted of all charges. So he strangles his wife.
Yeah. How is.
And then he's completely acquitted of all charges. So if you're looking to kill your wife, Kyle, start premeditating it and start having some alleged sleeping issues and then kill her and then tell everybody you had those sleeping issues flare up. But this is the one I'm going to wrap this little jewel up with that's really, really interesting. And this took place back in the 1880s. A Robert LeDrew, 35-year-old Robert LeDrew. Robert was a police detective in France. And during this time, he was believed amongst his peers to be one of the absolute best at his job. He is the man when it comes to solving crime and murder and just being able to get into the minds of criminals. So there was a businessman named André Monet. And in 1887, André Monet was found shot dead at the beach. And they couldn't find anything out about it at all. They did all the looking and everything they could do right there. So they go and they send for LeDrew. They bring him out to the case. So the very first thing he does, he shows up. He's got his notebook and he's covering, taking his time. And he gets there and he starts looking and he finds footprints in the sand. Okay?
Okay.
And he notices on these footprints, that has to be the killer's footprints, given the way it all looks like what had gone down at the crime scene. And one of the feet on his right foot is missing the big toe.
Okay.
So that's a pretty telltale sign.
Yeah. That'd be something easy to track.
So LeDrew goes and sits down. And he gets a chill because he's missing a big toe on his right foot. And he remembers that the morning that he woke up before he got called to the beach, that his socks were wet and sandy. He was terrified at this point. So he goes back with all of his investigation stuff, back to the police office, and he says, you know what? I think I killed that man. And I think I did it while I was asleep. Well, they have no idea what to do with him. This is their best investigator ever. Like, this man is the man.
He's had a missing toe for a while.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So they're like, well, there's only one way to really do this. Let's just see if it's a real thing. So they keep him in jail for observation for a few nights. But what they do is, without them telling him, he goes to sleep. They sneak into his cell and they lay a handgun beside his table, like he would have his normal stuff at his house, but they fill it with blanks. And then they back out and they watch. In the middle of the night, LeDrew gets up, reaches for the table, gets the handgun, walks up to the guards, and starts unloading the handgun on them. Because of that, and here's something that they didn't know, he was being treated, or trying to be, I say treated, he was untreated because he'd been hiding it, but he was suffering from syphilis. And they believed that the syphilis had slowly attacked his sleepwalking, that somnolism or whatever they call it, that's what had brought on all of these crazy, because he didn't do it for years and years and years. And it was just something that just had started happening over the last few months. Yeah. And for that reason alone, if they did all that, of course, he has to quit. He's no longer their best detective anymore. And he goes, they don't file charges on him. They don't do anything for him. They move him out into the countryside, and they move him into a nursing facility, and the nurses take care of him and watch after him, and there's guards there, and that's where he lived out his last days. So from 35 years old to however long it took before the syphilis killed him. But imagine, the reason I bring that up is, imagine that happening to you. As you wake up, you're a police detective.
And you're following this case, and you suddenly
dawns on you. It's the first
thing,
you wake up the next morning, and they've got this big crime scene that you have to come and investigate. And while you're investigating, you realize that all of the evidence that you're not telling people. They don't know to look. You're looking right at all of it, and it's pointing to you.
I wouldn't say anything.
And then the next, but you always realize when you woke up, you're like, why are my socks wet and sandy? And there's my tracks. Would be a terrifying thing to have.
I mean,
happen.
I guess it's possible. People can sleepwalk. They can sleep cook themselves at Thanksgiving dinner. I mean,
they sleep murder.
Sleep murder would be easy.
Yeah.
Actually, then like preparing a sandwich. I mean, because literally all you do is cock that Glock back and then just pull the trigger.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. So how crazy is all of those stories
insane
of people getting, look, nobody was convicted, folks. Everything that I read, no one was convicted of murder. They all got off. Everybody was either found not guilty or completely acquitted.
And that's insane.
So let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap this puppy up. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I've never even contemplated the idea of sleep murder. I never even thought of that. I never heard of that. It never dawned on me, and I didn't.
Because you're
didn't
a rational
think,
person.
I didn't think that a lawyer would be able to get you off with that defense. That's a new one on me.
I was looking, and I had remembered a couple of these cases from years ago about it being like maybe some comedian had talked about it or something. I can't remember what it was. And then when I got to looking into this, I'm like, everybody gets off with it. Everybody.
It's 100%.
But I say everybody. There may have been more that we just haven't heard about that tried to say sleepwalking.
Yeah.
Maybe there was only 2% that's really gotten off with it. But the odds... first of all, the fella that killed his youngest child and then tried to kill his other children.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't even know how you could... If you did it in your sleep, how could you not take your own life?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, I mean, but like we talked about with this guy with the missing time in the news story that I talked before we went into the stories. She couldn't find him. Now, you never hear him talking about dirt on their feet. You know, she didn't look at his feet. Was he abducted? Was he? I'm just wondering how many things happen whenever people are, maybe there's more. Like, what if maybe your wife's a sleepwalker and you're such a sound sleeper, maybe you don't know, or vice versa. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe you don't realize that they go and do things at night that you, I mean, I'm sure you'd start noticing stuff around the house, but there was one that I didn't even talk about that was, took place in Australia. That was a woman and her husband. And in the middle of the night, she would get up and go outside and find random men on the street and have sex with them in the middle of the night. And would wake up the next morning, and this went on for like a few years before the husband finally caught him. Yeah, but but it's still one of those things is, if you read the stories, you're like, wait a minute, because it was, if she was doing it on purpose, she was setting herself up to get caught when you, the more details of the story. Yeah, it was, there's just really, really crazy sleepwalking stories that, I guess it's possible because it's happened, but I can't wrap my head around the fact that that's something that they can do.
Man, that's
wild.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Luke is getting ready for the viewing of the Meg.
Yes, I can't wait.
They've been increasing the amount of commercials for it, so now I see the trailer like at least 6 times every night. He starts freaking out. he wants some toys.
A Meg toy?
So I bought him a toy. It was like a great white toy. And I was like, it's a Meg. And he's like, no, it's not. And I'm like, yeah, it is. I mean, what's the difference? It's a shark, right?
But he knew the difference.
But he's like, it's not big enough. I'm like, but it's all relative to scale. So like, if the people are like ants, then it's a Meg, right?
Yeah. He ain't buying it.
You try to argue. No, he's not buying it. And so the release just happens to come out on my brother's birthday. And my birthday's the day before. So I think we're going to make a whole event of it. I think we're going to do some bowling.
We have to go see it.
Yeah. I wonder if are you going to have to get in line or anything to buy tickets?
We'll buy them online.
Yeah, can you do that?
Yeah.
Depends on the theater here?
Yeah, we'll buy them online. It'll be a whole herd of us. The kids will go crazy. I can't wait to watch him lose his mind.
It's going
to
be.
Every time I see him, he asks me if I'm going to the Meg. I'm like, yeah, because I made the mistake of telling him that I've read all the books.
Yeah.
And then now it is like he's Meg crazy.
He is. He's.
I can't wait. It's going to be good times.
Anything prehistoric. He's about it. Speaking about it, did you, so there was a lot of controversy over the Poirier Alvarez fight. That some people are claiming that it was stopped early. I watched the fight. I think the referee made the correct call. I think he needed it to be stopped. I don't think he was improving himself. The one thing that he also made a correct call that I do think is ridiculous and needed to be removed from the game is the 12-6 elbows. Those are illegal. I don't know why you can't throw them, but you can leg kick somebody in the face.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem to make much sense. But it seemed like that was definitely a turning point in the fight. After the 12-6 elbow, they stood him back up, and then the tide seemed to change.
Well, there was, look, I'm a big fan of Eddie Alvarez, but the first time they fought, he hit Dustin with an illegal knee. And they no contested it. And he hit him with more than one. And because Dustin was down when he kneed him. And I understand you're in the heat of battle. Things happen. I get that. But in this fight, Eddie was trying to take mount on Dustin and trying to hit him with the guillotine, and Eddie grabbed the fence. And he's using the fence.
Yep, I saw the referee trying to get him to let go.
And then right after that, he throws a 12-6 elbow. So that's three dirty moves in two fights.
And one thing I noticed right before he threw that elbow, if you're watching off in the peripheral vision
his
of the camera,
his coaches are
telling him to do it.
But what?
So you're telling me they're not caught in the heat of battle. He is, right? So he's firing on a lot of adrenaline. These guys, knowing his past, been in trouble for it. You're telling me they don't know that that's an illegal move to do?
What you got to see is the isolation, though. They're not telling him to throw the 12-6 elbow. They're telling him to throw an elbow. So he's pushing Dustin's head with his right hand. All he has to do is slip it past, turn it over, and catch him with an elbow. But instead, all he sees is like the pumping of the horn if you're driving an 18-wheeler.
I saw him doing it to his shoulder.
And reaction is he just starts dropping the 12 without thinking because he's working off what his corner's telling him.
Yeah.
Whereas if the corner would have thrown a Muay Thai elbow, he would have thrown that elbow. It's just a reaction. Look, it hit him in the top of the shoulder. No harm, no foul, but I understand it's illegal. But it just is funny that there was a few things in there that you're like, I'm not saying Eddie's a dirty fighter, but he's had some issues with Dustin doing some dirty things, but Dustin wasn't having it. Hats off to the Lafayette fella right there, our Louisiana cousin, the Diamond Poirier, put it on him, put the stamp on Eddie.
Yeah, and I saw JJ's back, although that was kind of a boring fight.
Yeah.
Maybe not as boring as the last heavyweight fight, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. Disappointed.
Good fights coming up, though, with Cody and TJ. Can't wait for that one. That'll be a great fight. Those two still don't like each other. It's still going to be a wonderful matchup.
Yeah, that's going to be good. I'm getting prepared for school to start. I cannot wait. I'm going to be taking care of my father soon. So we have been planning, or not me, my wife's been planning on trips to taking kids school, clothes shopping, getting new shoes, things like that. Yay.
I don't even know when school starts. My daughter goes to college now, so I have no idea about the school.
I don't know the date. I know it's like the last week of August. I can't believe the summer's already gone by so fast. I can't believe I'm about to be 42.
You're so old.
Yeah, I know. I'm starting to feel it.
Folks, if you want to do me a favor, personal favor, and you want to see what I've been up to and what's going on, if you go to Facebook and you get on Facebook and you search up, you can go on Instagram too, Neanderthal Fight Club. Our brother from another mother just opened up his gym. It started this past weekend. And it's jumped on there. Go on there and throw a like on Facebook. It'd make him feel real good when he gets it going on. And y'all can keep up with, we're going to be posting pictures on there because we'll be up there running around choking one another. We'll get Kyle on the mats. We'll get some pictures of me strangling him. It'll be something fun like that. We'll get some good pictures made up. I'll let him heel hook me or something like that. It'll be fun. But go
on
there.
That sounds fun, yeah.
It was so much fun. Everything's great. It's all falling into place. But go on. Please go on there, get on Facebook, look up Neanderthal Fight Club.
Neanderthal.
Yeah, that's how you're supposed to pronounce it, but I'm just throwing it out there. So, and just hit the like button and that's it. It would mean a lot to me if you would.
Yeah, and if you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, please don't hesitate. Email the show. There's no reason to send an email asking where to send it. I'm telling you right now, there's no reason to ask if we want to hear it.
We're
telling you, we do. If you got a story, send it to us, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can call the show 817-945-3828. You can follow the show on all forms of social media, as well as me and Cam. Everybody out there, please have a good week. Don't work too hard. Till next time, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.